Greetings, this is the Automatically Deleted Husband, and wow, what a day. First, a confession, I erred. I'm a terrible human being. Yesterday, I talked about Abel hiding from God. Boy, did I blow it there. It was Adam and Eve in Genesis 3, hiding from God. Abel was the one who said, hey, I don't know where he is. Am I my brother's keeper? I erred. So all my theology is out the window. I'm a terrible person. Ignore everything I say because I just got it wrong, right? Or offer me grace. It was my error. Anyway, one of the things I've thought about frequently is 2 Corinthians 11, where Paul talks about, I repeat, let no one think me foolish, but even if you do, accept me as a fool, so I too may boast a little. And he goes on, when he talks about, I'm talking as a madman and so forth, but he talks about how the issues he went through with the 40 lashes less one, the shipwrecks and so forth. And the reason I contend that passage is in there is not so we go, oh, Paul, wow, but to show us, look what Paul went through. And if God can give Paul the grace to go through that, Paul can give me the grace to whatever I'm going through, because it's going to be nowhere near that. Nothing like this. My life is easy compared to what he went through, and I believe that's why it's there. In the same way, we see this with Job. You know, because Job was going along pretty well, and then one moment he had one thing after another. One person came, another person came, and suddenly his life collapsed. And we don't have to go through stuff like that. Nothing like that happens to the bulk of us, put it that way. So it's kind of, here's an example, and we don't have to do that. But what was Paul obviously constantly praised the Lord. But, you know, Job's comment, you know, naked I came into the world, naked I will return, blessed be the name of the Lord. So it is a remarkable, those people went through difficult times. And the difficulty we face is relatively minor, very real, but comparatively minor. This morning, I started early, and by 7 a.m., I had my first email sent because I had two really big emails I had to address today, and it was a big deal. It was a really big deal. The first one, you know, I mentioned the email that I sent to the state yesterday that I had to have in by midnight. Well, 11 minutes before midnight, my wife sent her email. And my assumption is because the two addresses were multiple, the letter that I got, that I assume she got also, printed letter, has only one email address. And because of previous emails, my two line on my email had three parties, including the one from the email. My wife's had those same three parties. My guess is what she did is she took my email and simply grab those email addresses. However, she did not send it to her dad, the carbon copy, but she did copy me. And what I saw in that, as I was reading it, I saw my wife's style. I even heard her voice while I was reading it. I love that lady. And it breaks my heart to read what she writes. But one of the fundamental things in the image I'm using today is I was there. I was fighting as hard as I could. This is from the What is a Woman video, the comments from Robert Hoagland that I've mentioned before. Because I want my kids to know I was there fighting as hard as I could. Because not only do I love my wife, I love my kids. I haven't got the foggiest who they are anymore. I really don't know what it's like to be a dad anymore. But I love my wife and I love my kids. Just two comments about what my wife wrote. One was, she wrote, for almost two decades, John has been developing software that was his priority to this day. And, you know, the way she phrased that and the context was kind of like belittling me. Developing the software. Allow me to point out that I am, by profession, a software developer. when she met me, my income was because I was a software developer. I was doing hardware also at the time. You know, again, I'm the guy who literally in our second year of marriage made $1 million in Wall Street. Basically, the bulk of it was software. Yes, there was some hardware involved, but the bulk of it was because I was a software developer. So, I have been developing software for basically, you know, it's interesting because my software experience now goes back 50 years. I've been doing it a while. And, you know, so even when, you know, at the time I was working for Heritage Systems, my own company, when we got married, and then I was contracting for others. But in both cases, I'm a software developer. When in the last many years, last decade plus, I've been a software developer. So my days spent developing software. And the software I did, you know, for Rapid OnSite for, 8 years or so or more, did not pay well. There was a possibility of a payout, but it did allow me to work part-time on Shofar Nexus, but it was part-time. And actually, I think in many respects slowed it down. So is that a condemning statement? No, I'm sorry. For almost two decades, John has been developing software? No, for five decades. And the one thing that really kind of disappointed me. Anyway, the children and I do live very economically. Our needs are met. We cook at home in our own kitchen, and we enjoy infrequent, inexpensive outings. We also went on an adventure in the summer of 2021 using a portion of our stimulus money. And when I read that, it really was a bit of a heartbreak. Because what my wife did, taking the stimulus money, you know, she makes comments about using the income from Jack. Taking the stimulus money was taking money from our kids, because it's our kids who will pay for that. It wasn't free money. It was borrowing from our kids. And, you know, I've been through that. I won't go through that again. It was a big disappointment. Because again, I'd like to remind you of the all the stimulus checks and whatnot. I did get a letter saying, you know, you may qualify. And I did not respond because it's theft. And I did not get a dime of it. It was theft. But that was, you know, so I did respond, and her letter and my response email is online. The link will be there. It hurt. But again, I responded by 7 a.m. with the intent of, even though the deadline was midnight, and it was 7 hours later, it was before the start of business. It really didn't matter what the state receives. It's what my wife receives. Because I want to let my wife know I love that lady. But there's more. That was done by 7. By 8 a.m., I had another email out, and both these emails took some time to write. And the title of my of this voicemail today, "Know That You Are Loved by a Mormon in Utah." I got that statement around noon, and it literally brought me to tears. It really did. I have a friend who is a Mormon in Utah. There is a mutual love. You know, love your neighbor as yourself. It's kind of a command of God. And, you know, the thing is, it's kind of a generic, everyone, a blanket statement. But then you'd build relationships. My relationship, for example, with Miss Lillian is a whole lot closer than my relationship with somebody I would meet in the street. I'm still called to love that person I meet in the street. But because I've built a relationship with Miss Lillian, it's not a deep one in the sense we're not family. You know, even though she is old enough to be my mom and she often acts like my mom. but there's a stronger bond there. Probably the closest relationship I have right now, and for a long time, is my friend Chris. I mean, there is a deep bond between the two of us. You know, if I need to do something for someone, if I need to do something even costly for someone, I am far more willing to do it for Chris than most anybody else, simply because we have a deep bond. And of course, you know, we have this picture, and that picture is great. I mean, just anyway. Anyway, so there's that deep bond. But even though my friend in Utah, we've never met face to face, we've been in dialogue for 3 or 4 years or more. We've been on the phone a few times. We've done worked in some things together. We have a fundamental disagreement on our foundation. And again, you know, I pointed out, he asked me to read the book. I bought the book and read it out of respect and love for him. Even though, as I suggested, I do not recommend the book. However, because we have this bond, there's a little bit more of an openness to be able to say, okay, I think you're wrong here, and he can say the same to me. And we don't run from each other. It's not, oh, I'm going to, you know, we're not the snowflakes of today. I can look at him or email him or whatnot, and he can email me and say, you're wrong on this. This is the reality. Fine. Great. Let's examine that. Let's not say, well, you have your opinion, and I have mine. No, I don't care about my opinion or yours. I want to know what the truth is. And we go back and forth on that. And even and the issue is, you know, we talked about yesterday I mentioned Abraham, the sacrifice, or the burnt offering that was required of him of Isaac, and that the "you shall not kill" or "you shall not murder" and so forth didn't come till Exodus 20. And this is Genesis 22. So there's an order issue. And I pointed out, you know, the Genesis 9:6, you know, "whosoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed." And then, of course, the Genesis 3 and 4, which I made an error on. Oh, no. But anyway, we discussed that. And so because I got a response from him, my next priority to my wife was to him. Because that relationship is too important. Again, my relationship with Chris, simply because it may be the longest running relationship besides my wife that I have in my life. And there is a deep fundamental bond. One, we enjoy hiking together. We enjoy theology dialogue and so forth. So we're on the same page for the most part, not completely. And we find great joy in our relationship. And because of the fact we can physically interact, we've been to the bottom. You know, I've list the people that I've been to the top of Big Frog with, and the top of Buzzard Point with, and hiked, you know, 16 miles in Savage Gulf, and a couple other places. It's Chris. That's it. And so we have a strong bond. But, I have some other people, you know, Lynn and Gary, who were a big part of my life for a number of years, and they aren't anymore because they're both dead. And there are a few others like that. But of the people that are not face to face, there are a few others that I have a good relationship with, but the dialogue is not as frequent, of late. Some of them have been more frequent in the past. But the one that's been long-lasting and seems to be have that strong tie is with my friend in Utah, even though we fundamentally disagree. But we're willing to engage each other. And one of the things I find so vital about that is that seems to be against PCA doctrine. All the leadership within PCA that I've dealt with in the past refused to deal with me now, even though I appeal and appeal and appeal to them. And they offer silence. Why do I see more love from a Latter-day Saint than someone who claims the same Christ, allegedly claims the same Christ that I do? Why? This is not a light-duty question. It really is a big deal. It is a big deal. But then, in our interaction today, we went back and forth in a few things. And, it was, okay, we disagree on this, we need to go further on it and so forth. But he ended with that line, know that you're loved by a Mormon in Utah. And I specifically followed up later with permission to be able to quote him on that. I do feel loved by him. I thought I shared the same foundation with the woman I committed my life to, the woman I'm one flesh with. She's not showing love. When I read the email from her, it breaks my heart because I love that lady. It concerns me for that lady. It concerns me greatly for that lady because of what she wrote. You know, the close. If the court determines to hear other subjects beyond the question of monetary child support, I am ready to respond to the other subjects that John has shared. I don't think she is. I honestly don't think she is. And it scares me because, as I mentioned yesterday, what will happen to my kids, even just one of them? Mom, Dad was trying to reconcile the family. Why did you prevent it? Why did you say no? Dad was sharing the scripture. Dad was showing you love. Why did you say no? And when my child turns 25 and says, Dad, where were you? I was there. I was fighting as hard as I could. I'd say, I was not prepared to let this happen. In this case, the case of Mr. Hoagland, his kid was going through gender reassignment, which again is hogwash. The irony is perhaps one of the best presentations on that issue was by the comedian J.P. Sears, The Awaken with J.P., where he did his video, and I have it, so I'll link to it. I'll provide it because it's on Kozlowska.org, where he, Vanderbilt here in Tennessee, some woman who's ahead of it, and basically said, yeah, there's a lot of money here. And we're going to do this because there's a lot of money here. And if you have, ethical issues on here, you probably shouldn't be working for Vanderbilt. I mean, she said it on video. It's right there for you to see. And it's kind of like, this is the medical community. I mean, this is a medical college. This is what they teach. And of course, it's consistent with so much of the medical community. We're in it for the big bucks. To keep people healthy? Nah. Then we don't get much business. We want people sick. And we want to make a lot of money because it makes us feel like we're important and we live nice. Is there any distance in the leadership of the institutional church? Let me think. I love my wife. I am concerned what she wrote today. My response was to continue to show her love, pointing out, the bottom line is that I'm seeking reconciliation with my wife and kids. Clearly, my wife is actively attempting to thwart that. I ask her to keep the promise she made, do the loving thing for our kids, and return to obedience to Christ, such as the blatant 1 Corinthians 7:11. I love her, and I won't give up on her. Was that clear? There is no evidence of any love for me and my wife. And to be honest, there's no evidence of any love for my kids and my wife. And the worst thing is, there's no evidence of any love for my wife in my wife. I love that lady. I don't feel love from my father-in-law, from institutional church leadership within the PCA. I feel an honest love from my Mormon friend in Utah. I have a more intense love. That love is reciprocated to my friend in Utah. It is probably toward another man. Clearly, the deepest was with my brother, Chris. But he comes in, I'm sorry, a very distant second to my kids and even more to my wife. The number one priority in my life is the woman I'm one flesh with, the woman I love and adore, the woman I will not give up on. She may not like that, but she made a promise to me. And I made a promise to her. And then, of course, there's the obedience to Christ thing. And I also think she's cute. So, because love never ends, the 1 Corinthians 13:8 that I've quoted a lot lately, and God's command to never leave her or forsake her by mirroring his statement to us that he will never leave us or forsake us. My lady, my wife, the woman I love and adore, the woman I will not give up on. I love you and I want you back.